All right, get ready to dive deep with us into the world of meetings.
Meetings.
I know, right? But they're kind of essential, aren't they?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, we can't really get much done without some form of collaboration, right?
Exactly. And that's why we decided to take a closer look at this topic. We actually received some pretty interesting research on how to make meetings. Well, how to make them actually work. Make them productive. And maybe even, dare I say it, enjoyable.
Enjoyable meetings, huh? Now that's a concept.
I know. Sounds crazy, right?
Yeah.
But seriously, there were some seriously insightful tips and tricks in these documents we got. And one of the first things that really jumped out was, well, it was questioning the need for an in-person meeting in the first place. Like, do we always need to be physically present in the same room to get things done?
I think we both know the answer to that one, don't we?
Oh, yeah. We've all been there, stuck in those meetings where you're thinking, this could have been an email.
Couldn't agree more. And the research actually backs that up. It suggests that before we automatically book that conference room, we should really think about whether a virtual meeting, maybe on a platform like Zoom, one of those, might actually be just as effective, maybe even more so.
It's true, especially these days,
Yeah.
with more and more people working remotely and everything.
Yeah, virtual meetings are kind of becoming the norm.
Definitely. And it makes sense when you think about it. You save time, you save energy, you cut down on travel costs. And let's be honest, it's better for the environment too, right? Reduce that carbon footprint a bit.
Absolutely. And it's not just about the practical benefits either. Sometimes those virtual meetings can actually lead to, to better communication and participation. Because in a virtual setting, it can be easier to make sure that everybody has a chance to speak up, to share their ideas, especially those who might be a bit more hesitant to speak up in a traditional meeting room.
It can be a bit intimidating for some people, for
Yeah.
sure, all those eyes on you. But you're right, a virtual setting can kind of level the playing field a bit.
And create a more inclusive environment.
Totally. But whether it's in person or virtual, one thing that all those sources we looked at really emphasized is that the key to a successful meeting is, well, it's preparation.
Preparation, preparation, preparation.
It's not just about the logistics, though, right? Like booking the room and sending out the invites.
No. It's about setting the stage for engagement.
Engagement is a good word for it.
One of the sources called it the hidden art of pre-meeting engagement, which I thought was a really interesting way to put it. It suggested things like circulating a pre-read a day or two beforehand, just a concise document with the key discussion points so people have a chance to think about it in advance, or even doing a quick poll online to kind of gauge everyone's initial thoughts.
So smart, right? Because it gives everyone time to actually digest the information, to maybe do a little research and gather their thoughts so they can come to the meeting prepared with, well, with more valuable input.
Exactly. Instead of just sitting there listening passively, they can jump right into the discussion, be more
It
active.
transforms the whole dynamic of the meeting, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And it makes people feel valued, right? Because
Yeah.
their input is actually being sought out. And not just like, oh, here's the info. Now, what do you think? It's more like, we value your opinion. Let's work together on this.
And that sense of value can make a huge difference in how people approach the meeting, their level of engagement.
Makes them feel like they're actually part of the process, not just along for the ride.
Totally. And you know what else I found fascinating in the research? The emphasis on post-meeting interactions, too. Like grabbing a coffee or tea together afterward, even just for a few minutes.
Yeah, those informal chats, around the water cooler or whatever.
Yeah.
Exactly. And they might seem like small things, insignificant. But they can actually, well, they create space for informal networking, relationship building, and sometimes even those aha moments that often happen outside of that formal setting.
It's like extending the conversation, letting it breathe a little bit, and that's often where the real magic happens.
You're right. It's those informal connections that can really solidify the ideas and relationships that were formed during the meeting.
And speaking of setting the stage for a successful meeting, you know what else is absolutely essential?
Hit me with it.
A well-structured agenda. I mean, seriously, it's non-negotiable, according to the research.
Yeah, the agenda is like the meeting's roadmap.
Right.
Tells everyone where you're going and how you plan to get there.
Exactly. And it's not just about listing the topics, in a bullet point format.
There's the art to it.
Oh, yeah. The way the agenda is structured actually sends subtle messages about priorities and expectations. Like the amount of time that's allocated to each item, where it's placed on the agenda, all of that speaks volumes.
It's almost like you're saying, this is what we value, and this is how we're going to use our time together.
Exactly. So When you put that extra effort into crafting the agenda, it's a sign of respect for everyone's time, and it helps keep the meeting focused.
Which brings us to the role of the chairperson.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a topic that I found really interesting in the research. You know, it's not just about timekeeping.
No, not at all. It's about leadership.
About setting the tone for the entire meeting.
Exactly. And what I found particularly fascinating was the emphasis on building trust. Like, how does the chairperson actually build trust among the participants? And the research provided some really specific strategies.
I'm all ears. Tell me more about those strategies.
Well, one strategy is demonstrating impartiality, making sure that everyone feels heard, no matter their position.
That makes sense. If the chairperson favors certain people or ideas, it can really throw things off balance.
Totally. And then, of course, there's being a good listener. Actively engaging with what others are saying.
Not just sitting there, nodding their head.
No, not at all. Asking clarifying questions, summarizing key points, making sure everyone's on the same page.
And it's also about showing genuine interest in what others have to say.
Creating that respectful, collaborative vibe.
And finally,
a good chairperson is open to seeking advice from others.
That shows humility, right? Yeah. A willingness to learn.
And that can go a long way in building trust and encouraging participation.
You know, I've definitely been in those meetings where the chairperson just completely transformed the dynamic. Like, they took what could have been a chaotic mess and turned it into this focused, productive, even enjoyable experience. It's amazing what a skilled chairperson can do.
It's like they're the conductor of an orchestra, right? Guiding the flow of the conversation, making sure everyone plays their part harmoniously.
Love that analogy. And speaking of guidance, the research we dug into had a whole bunch of practical tips to help us all become better meeting conductors.
Oh, yeah. A whole symphony of tips.
Should we dive into those?
Let's do it. How about we start with one that's super relevant in today's globalized world, you know, with teams spread all over the place.
Okay. Lay it on me.
Being mindful of cultural differences.
Oh, that's huge. What might be a harmless joke in one culture could be totally misinterpreted in another. Right.
Exactly. And sometimes even lead to some really awkward situations. So the research suggests erring on the side of caution, you know, especially when humor is involved.
It's about being respectful and creating an inclusive environment.
Where everyone feels comfortable participating.
Because we all come from different backgrounds, have different communication styles.
Diversity is a beautiful thing, but it can also lead to some communication challenges if we're not mindful. Another tip that stood out was about keeping the meeting size manageable.
How many people are we talking here? What's the magic number?
Well, ideally, no more than 20.
Okay, that makes sense. It's kind of hard to have a meaningful discussion when you're in a massive crowd.
Right. And those smaller groups tend to create a more focused, less formal atmosphere, which usually leads to, well, to more open and productive dialogue.
And it's easier to ensure that everyone has a chance to contribute, to share their thoughts.
Okay, ready for another tip?
Hit me.
This one might seem obvious, but you'd be surprised how often it's overlooked.
I'm intrigued. What is it?
Use microphones.
Ah, yes. Essential in larger meetings or when some people are joining remotely.
Exactly. Even if you think you have a booming voice, a microphone ensures that everyone can hear you clearly. And that's crucial for effective communication.
Creates a more professional atmosphere, too, I think.
It shows that you're taking the meeting seriously, respecting everyone's time.
Agreed. Okay, what else you got?
Now, this one is interesting. It's about managing the emotional temperature of the meeting.
Oh, okay. Tell me more about that.
Meetings, you know, they can be a mix of kind of mundane tasks, but also some really high stakes issues.
Right.
And the source material really emphasized the importance of striking that balance, you know?
Between keeping things light, but also addressing those important issues.
Yeah. It's encouraging healthy debate, constructive criticism, but also knowing when to, you know, maybe take those more contentious conversations offline, because sometimes those conversations can really derail the meeting.
Totally. Or create unnecessary tension, right?
It's all about being sensitive to the group dynamic, reading the room, and knowing when a particular topic might be better suited for a smaller, more focused discussion.
It's that delicate balance.
Yeah.
Keeping the dialogue open, but staying on track.
Exactly. And that brings us to another key point, the importance of staying focused and on schedule. Meetings have this tendency to drift off on tangents.
Oh, yeah. I've been in those meetings that seem to go on forever.
And they just suck the life out of you.
It's a productivity killer for sure.
Yeah.
So how do we combat that?
One way is to start the meeting by clearly stating the purpose. And the intended duration. It sets the tone, helps everyone stay focused.
It's like setting boundaries.
Creating a container for the conversation. And to further reinforce those boundaries, the research actually suggests, get this, creating a poster outlining the meeting's ground rules.
A poster. I know, right? It's actually a really clever idea.
It is, actually. I love
it. It's a visual reminder, right?
Yeah.
You can display it prominently in the room.
So what kind of rules might be included on this poster?
It could be things like, you know, keeping phones on mute, encouraging active listening, reminding people about confidentiality if that's relevant. It could even be things like, you know, respecting different perspectives.
Makes sense.
It sets the stage for a more professional and efficient meeting. And it creates a sense of shared accountability.
Because everyone's on the same page about how to engage, right?
Another tip that I found helpful was about managing the agenda itself.
Oh, yeah. The agenda.
So the research recommends running through the agenda at the start of the meeting.
Okay, that's pretty standard, right?
Yeah. But then it suggests inviting participants to add any topics they'd like to discuss. That's a good way to ensure nothing gets overlooked. But how do you prevent the agenda from becoming, you know, overloaded?
Ah, good question. It's all about keeping the discussions focused on those key issues. And being really selective about, you know, those any other business items.
So not every random thought warrants airtime.
Exactly. It's about prioritizing and deferring those less pressing items.
To a future meeting, maybe. Or a quick email.
And if the conversation starts to veer off track, well, that's where the chairperson steps in.
Gently steers it back, right?
Like a master navigator guiding the ship through choppy waters.
Oh, I like that. The chairperson is the navigator. Another tip that jumped out at me was about, well, it was about clarifying roles and responsibilities. You know, who does what by when?
Oh, yeah, that's crucial. Turning those decisions into action.
Because otherwise you have that classic scenario where everyone leaves the meeting thinking someone else is going to handle that task, right?
Exactly. And then nothing gets done.
So how do we avoid that?
The research suggests actually writing it down. You know, the proposal and those assigned responsibilities, maybe on a flip chart where everyone can see it.
Oh, that's a good idea. Creates that visual record of the agreement.
Well, it adds a layer of accountability.
Speaking of accountability, the research had some interesting thoughts on the use of subgroups.
Ah, yes, subgroups. They can be tricky.
Sometimes they're necessary, right?
Of course. But they can also be a huge time suck if they're not managed effectively.
So what's the key to managing them well?
The research cautions against having too many subgroups, unless there's a clear need.
So keeping them focused, strategic.
Exactly. It's about focusing on those strategic issues and making those action-oriented decisions within the main meeting, rather than, you know, delegating everything to those smaller groups.
Right. Keeping that decision-making power centralized whenever possible.
And if subgroups are necessary, then it's all about setting those clear deadlines, making sure they come up with concrete recommendations.
No endless subgroup meetings that never seem to go anywhere.
Exactly. It's about being ruthless with time.
And speaking of time, one of the tips suggested circulating those draft meeting notes, you know, within 24 hours.
To keep the momentum going, right?
Yeah. And to capture those action items, make sure everyone's on the same page.
And prevent those dreaded, wait, what did we decide moments?
Which can happen way too often, let's be honest.
Okay, ready for a little twist?
A twist. Okay, I'm intrigued. Lay it on me.
Let's talk about disaster management.
Disaster management. How does that fit into our conversation about meetings?
Well, the source material we looked at actually delves into the unique challenges of leading, well, they're often called teams in disaster management.
Okay, I'm listening.
And it makes a really compelling argument that the concept of teams in disaster management, well, it's kind of a misnomer.
A misnomer, why is that?
Because unlike those traditional teams, you know, where everyone has a shared goal, well, in a disaster situation, those cluster teams, they're made up of individuals from all these different organizations.
Ah, I see. So they might not all be on the same page, so to speak.
Right. And they have their own priorities, their own loyalties, their own agendas.
So it's not really a cohesive team in the traditional sense. More like a temporary alliance.
Exactly. Which creates a whole new set of complexities for those leaders.
Wow, that sounds incredibly challenging. How do you even begin to lead effectively in that kind of environment? You know, where everyone has their own, well, their own everything.
That's the million-dollar question. Thankfully, the research offers some valuable insights.
Insights. Okay, I'm all ears.
They come in the form of 7 guiding principles for leading in disaster management.
7 principles. Okay, I'm definitely intrigued.
Yeah, they're like a roadmap for navigating those complexities.
Let's dive into those principles.
All right, so we're back and ready to unpack those seven principles for leading in disaster management.
You know, that situation where team doesn't really quite capture the dynamic,
Right,
right?
exactly. You've got all these individuals from all these different organizations.
With their own agendas and loyalties.
Yeah, it's a whole other ballgame. So let's dive into those principles, shall we?
Lead the way.
The first one is all about, well, it's about focusing on the goal, the ultimate objective. You know,
Which, in a disaster situation, I'm guessing would be providing aid and support to those affected.
exactly. But here's the thing. The source material we looked at emphasizes that, in addition to that overarching goal, you know, the humanitarian one, those leaders also need to understand those agendas of top management within their own organizations.
So it's not just about the big picture, right? You got to navigate those organizational politics too.
It's a balancing act for sure. And that leads us to the second principle. It's about how to effectively advocate for change within that, you know, that complex system.
Okay, give me the rundown. How did we do that?
The source material calls it applying the four C's: comprehensive, consistent, coherent, and collected.
The four C's. I
Yeah.
like it. Sounds catchy.
It's about building a strong case for change, making sure your proposals are well thought out, aligned with the interests of everyone involved.
So it's not just about pushing your own agenda, right?
Nope. It's about building consensus, presenting a unified front.
Finding that common ground.
Exactly. And that brings us to principle number three, moving from those isolated efforts to real collaboration.
Collaboration. Sounds easy enough, right?
You'd think so, but in disaster management, it can be a real challenge.
I can imagine. So many different organizations, individuals, all trying to do their part.
And the source material actually argues that, well, that fostering collaboration is crucial if you want to achieve those timely and effective humanitarian outcomes.
Because at the end of the day, that's what it's all about, right?
Yeah.
Helping those in need.
Right. It even quotes a disaster management expert who said, "Things are usually done by people over whom you have no control. It is better that they be allies."
Powerful stuff. It really highlights that need to build those relationships, to work together, even with people who might not be, your natural allies.
Because everyone brings something valuable to the table.
So how do we foster that collaboration in such a fragmented environment?
That leads us to principle number four, building trust.
Trust, yeah, that's essential in any collaborative effort, but especially in a high-stakes environment like a disaster response, right?
Absolutely. The source material reminds us that disaster management, it's not a popularity contest. It's about earning that trust and respect from your colleagues.
So it's about being competent, reliable.
Exactly. Demonstrating a deep understanding of, well, of everyone's needs and agendas, and delivering on your promises, no matter how small.
Showing up consistently.
Exactly. Which brings us to principle number five, be enabled. It's about surrounding yourself with the right people, having the authority to allocate those resources effectively.
So you're not constantly having to go through layers of bureaucracy to get things done.
Precisely. Which leads us to principle number six, which is closely related. Be empowered.
Enablement and empowerment. They're both crucial for effective leadership, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. And this principle, it emphasizes making sure that you've been delegated the necessary authority and that you have the responsibility to actually carry out your role.
Because if you're constantly having to seek permission, it can really undermine your credibility, right?
And slow down the entire response effort.
So it's about having the confidence to act decisively.
Exactly. And that brings us to the seventh and final principle, be flexible.
Flexibility. Yeah, I can see how that's crucial in a field as unpredictable as disaster management.
You've got to be able to adapt to those ever-changing circumstances. And the source material uses a really great analogy to illustrate this point.
Oh, I love analogies. Hit me with it.
It compares leading in disaster management to, well, to sailing a boat. Reaching your destination might not always involve sailing in a straight line.
You've got to tack back and forth, adjust to the wind.
Exactly. Sometimes you need to change course, even if it means deviating from that original plan.
You know, these seven principles, they offer such a valuable framework for thinking about leadership, not just in disaster management, but in any complex situation, really.
It's about finding that balance, building trust, and embracing that flexibility.
And recognizing that there's no one-size-fits-all approach, right?
Right. What works in one situation might not work in another. It's about being adaptable, responsive.
This has been such an insightful look into leadership in disaster management.
It's truly inspiring work, the dedication of those individuals who, who work in that field.
It makes our little meeting challenges seem pretty insignificant, huh?
Yeah, it really puts things in perspective. But, we're not done yet. We're still on our deep dive into the world of meetings.
Back to the meeting trenches.
We've still got a few more nuggets of wisdom to share from those materials.
More tips and tricks. Okay, I'm ready.
Let's shift gears back to some of those practical aspects of running a meeting.
Sounds good to me. Let's do it.
So the source material offers some advice on, on how to handle those meeting minutes and those any other business items.
Okay, I'm listening.
It actually suggests skipping the formality of, asking for approval of the minutes.
Really? But isn't that like standard procedure?
You'd think so, right? But the source material argues that it can be a real time waster, and it distracts from the real purpose of the meeting.
Which is to move forward, not dwell on the past.
Exactly. So instead of formally approving those minutes, it recommends focusing on those matters arising from the previous meeting.
And incorporating those items into the current agenda.
Streamlining the process, keeping the energy moving forward.
Makes sense. And what about those any other business items?
Ah, yes. The dreaded AOB. The research suggests being really selective.
So not every random thought warrants a discussion.
Exactly. Prioritize. Defer those less pressing items.
Keep the meeting focused.
Precisely. And remember that tip we talked about earlier about starting the meeting with a clear purpose and a time limit.
Yeah, setting those boundaries.
Well, the source material suggests reinforcing that focus by pointing to a poster outlining those ground rules.
Oh, I love that idea. The visual reminder.
It can be super effective.
Setting the stage for success. Okay, what else?
Here's one that might surprise you. The source material advises against asking participants if they want to, add items to the agenda or change the order.
Interesting. Why is that?
It argues that a well-crafted agenda, one that's created in consultation with everyone beforehand, should already encompass those most important topics.
And if something urgent comes up, they can always bring it up under AOB.
Right. It's about having that structure.
Yeah.
Avoiding those unnecessary diversions.
But it also requires the chairperson to be really skilled in facilitating that open communication, right?
Absolutely. It's a balancing act for sure. Okay, last tip for this segment. Ready for it?
Hit me.
Avoid using humor.
Avoid humor, seriously. But humor can be a good thing, right? It can lighten the mood, make people feel more comfortable.
I agree. But the source material cautions that jokes, they can easily be misinterpreted, especially in those multicultural environments.
Ah, I see what you mean. What might be funny to one person could be offensive to another.
Exactly. It's about creating that inclusive environment where everyone feels respected.
It's a good reminder to be mindful of our audience and the context. So to sum it all up, effectively managing the nitty-gritty of a meeting involves streamlining the process, being mindful of those cultural differences, and creating an environment where everyone feels safe and respected.
And empowered to contribute their best ideas.
Turning those credit meetings into productive and engaging, maybe even enjoyable experiences. Well, we've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive, from pre-meeting strategies to the unique challenges of leading in disaster management.
It's been quite a journey.
And I feel like I've learned so much about how to make meetings actually work.
I'm glad to hear it. So are we ready to wrap things up?
I think so. Bring it home. We've been through a lot in this deep dive.
We have, haven't we?
All those pre-meeting strategies.
And then those leadership challenges in disaster management, right?
It's made me realize that we really need to approach meetings more strategically.
Definitely. With intention,
Yeah, like what's the purpose? What are we actually trying to achieve here?
Instead of just like going through the motions.
Because when you have a plan, when you're intentional about it.
It can make all the difference, right?
Absolutely. It's like, it's like the difference between, wandering around lost in the woods.
And having a map and a compass.
Exactly. You're much more likely to reach your destination if you know where you're going.
And you'll probably enjoy the journey a lot more too.
So speaking of reaching our destination, how about we talk about how to actually close out a meeting effectively.
Yes. The grand finale.
The source material had some good advice on that too.
It emphasized ending on a note of clarity and action.
So not just fading out with those vague promises to follow up.
Right. It's about summarizing those key decisions.
And those action items.
With clear assignments of responsibility.
Turning those discussions into tangible outcomes.
And creating that sense of accountability.
Because otherwise it's like, we had all these great ideas, but then
nothing actually happens.
Right. It's all talk and no action.
We need to close that loop, right? Make sure those ideas actually become reality.
Well said. So before we officially adjourn this deep dive, I wanted to take a moment to reflect on, well, on what really resonated with me from all those incredible insights.
I'm curious to hear your thoughts. What stood out to you the most?
You know, it's funny, but it's the simple reminder that meetings, despite their often negative reputation.
Oh, yeah. Meetings get a bad rap.
They can actually be really powerful tools for, well, for collaboration, for innovation.
When they're done right.
Exactly. It's all about how we approach them.
With intention, with a plan.
And with that focus on, you know, creating a truly collaborative environment.
Where everyone feels safe to share their ideas.
Absolutely. And for me, what really resonated was that that exploration of leadership and disaster management.
It was a fascinating topic, wasn't it?
It really was. It reminded me that effective leadership, it's not about command and control, you know.
It's about navigating that complexity, building trust.
Empowering others.
And those are lessons that apply, well, they apply to all of us, really.
In any field, in any situation where we need to, well, where we need to lead.
Absolutely.
Well, on that note, I want to thank you for sharing your expertise with me and with our listeners.
It's been my pleasure. I always enjoy these deep dives.
I do, too. And to our listeners, I hope this has inspired you to maybe, well, to maybe rethink your approach to meetings a little bit.
Remember, meetings don't have to be a dreaded chore.
They can be opportunities to connect, to collaborate, to, well, to create something meaningful.
Until next time, may all your meetings be productive, engaging.
And maybe even a little bit enjoyable.
Happy meeting, everyone.